When I was coming out in the 80s, that was the same time as a lot of public health campaigns about AIDS. And that did a lot to shape my identity as a gay man. In some ways it was great, because there were posters everywhere featuring gay men. I never saw images of gay men put up openly in public before, so that was really something. Except the men on these advertisements were always very cleanly, clearly middle class, white, muscly, like they'd been to the gym a lot, depicted walking on a tropical beach somewhere holding hands, and that wasn't what I looked like. The other thing was, of course, that these billboards were all about safer sex or getting tested. So at the end of the day, the message was that if you were a gay man and you had sex, you were going to die. A government can be completely conservative, but when something becomes a public health issue, for example, in the case of HIV, then they have to do something, and that's how things become included in policy. The relationship between activism and how things get included at a government level is real, but there's also a process of co-option where the power gets taken out of the people's hands. So, on the one hand, you have all of these glossy posters, the public health response to HIV. Then on the other, you have the grassroots activists like ACT UP organising demos against pharmaceutical companies, lobbying for treatment, doing die-ins and kiss-ins, and a bunch of anarchist punks running around graffitiing advertising billboards, all those happy hetero toothpaste advertisements and the like. In London in the 80s, there was a very active squatting movement in Stoke Newington and Stamford Hill. There were entire estate blocks of squats, and people were very organised. A lot of anarchists, and everyone was involved in different campaigns. Hackney Council brought in a housing advisor, Brindley Heaven, to try and clear up the squatting problem. We plastered the whole of Hackney with posters. Every lamppost and wall had one of those posters that read, "Brindley Heaven, go to hell." And we even managed to occupy Hackney Town Hall and issue our demands. There was a massive pushback against squatters and activism from the powers that be. Hackney Council spent £3 million evicting the Stamford Hill Estate squat with a siege that lasted for 3 days. How did I become a social worker? Well, I was in a seaside town and I met this guy in a public toilet. We messed about a bit and then we started talking. Then this guy gave me his card. It turned out that he was a social worker doing sex education outreach. Seems he took his job quite literally. He told me that I should get an education so I could make something of myself. After that, I started to think, well, if he can be a social worker, then why can't I? I did enrol at university, of course. In those days, you could do so for free, so I could have an education. Working in the third sector wasn't really about a political motivation for me. It was about having a meal ticket and paying the rent while I plotted the revolution. A lot of people from different backgrounds work in the third sector because they can. Those are the workplaces where you are protected against discrimination. That's why you see a very diverse workforce in the public sector, at least in the front line, because the management level is still mostly white men. Coming out to my parents as having HIV was in a lot of ways easier than when I came out to them a couple of decades earlier as being gay. God, I remember telling my mum I was gay back in the 80s. They were pretty calm about the news that I was HIV positive. It was me that had the big reaction. My response was to go around telling absolutely everyone I knew. Most of these people were part of the straight left activist community. Many of them would freak out and have huge reactions when I told them. Maybe that was a way of having control, being the educator. In social work, there was a particular way that we would all work together. You've got all these people in an office, and it's natural that people talk to those around them, that they compare notes, swap contacts, and give each other ideas of how to deal with situations. That also is a way to process the intensity of the work. When the government started to take apart the public sector, they sent in experts to redevise the system. Some management body who had no idea would come and impose a structure that was supposed to make us more efficient. Management destroyed the organic working culture we had. Let's face it, social work is pretty intense, but it just became impossible. When I got a job lecturing at a university, I was amazed. Social work had become so pressured, so impossible. I felt guilty for leaving my colleagues, but in another way, I thought I had it made. Me, lecturing in a university, I could hardly believe it. It turned out to be an absolute nightmare. Ridiculous work structures, psychopathic managers, and a completely capitalist model of squeezing its workers harder and harder. The university feels like a money-making machine. That's all it is. It's nothing to do with students, or learning, or people. Work. What does that even mean? There are so many artificial separations in our lives between what is counted as work and what isn't work. All that really means is what is paid and unpaid. The economy runs on unpaid and underpaid labour. If it wasn't for all the unpaid physical and emotional care work being done, no one would ever make it to their paid jobs in the first place. If I didn't have to work for money, wow, if I had that, well, then I suppose that I would spend all my time working. I'd spend my time doing things that need to be done and that I have the skills for. I just want it to mean something. I've nothing against working. I've been an activist all my life.